cafes to be open. Lydia's phone rang. Claire didn't slow as she answered.
What?
Paul said, take a lift. Go to the Hyatt Regency. Claire kept the line open. She took the left. She saw the Hyatt in the distance. Her knees hurt. Her legs were screaming. She was used to running on the treadmill, not up and down hills and over cracks in the concrete. Sweat dripped from her scalp and down her back. The waist of her jeans was starting to chafe. She gripped the phone in her hand as she ran. How was Paul tracking her? Was Mayhew tag-teaming Harvey? Were they trying to funnel her into a location where they could grab her? The bellhop outside the Hyatt opened the door when he saw Claire round the drive. If he thought it was odd that a grown woman dressed in jeans and a button-down shirt had gone for a run at 6 in the morning, he didn't say. Inside the building, Claire slowed her pace. She followed the signs to the women's restroom. She pushed open the door. She checked the stalls to make sure they were empty. Claire locked the last stall door. She sat down on the toilet. She was panting for breaths when she said,
let me speak to Lydia.
I can let you hear her scream.
Claire put her hand to her mouth. What had he done? 12 hours. He could have Lydia in Key West or New Orleans or Richmond by now. He could be torturing her and beating her and... Claire couldn't let herself think of the and. Paul asked,
still there?
She fought back the overwhelming agony that came from knowing exactly what her husband was capable of.
You said you weren't going to hurt her.
You said you were going to call me back.
I will drive over that fucking USB drive with a Mack truck.
Paul had to know that Claire would do it. She had never been averse to burning bridges she was still trying to cross. He asked,
where is it?
Claire tried to think of an area she was familiar with, but Paul was not. It's at the Wells Fargo on Central Avenue.
What?
He sounded concerned.
That's a very dangerous area, Claire.
Are you really worrying about my safety?
You need to be careful, he warned. Where is the bank exactly?
Near the main post office.
Claire had driven to the post office several times to drop off mailers for the Humane Society.
I'll go get it right now. We can meet somewhere and...
It's almost 6 in the morning. The bank won't be open until 9.
Claire waited.
You can't leave now. You'll get carjacked if you park the Tesla on Central for that long.
She could practically hear the wheels turning in his head.
Stay in the hotel. At 8:30, drive down to Hapeville. That should get you there right when the bank is opening.
Okay.
Traffic will be bad coming back. Get on 75 and wait to hear from me.
Claire didn't ask how he would know where she was because she was beginning to think Paul knew everything.
Nolan told me what you did.
Is that right?
Claire didn't elaborate, but they both knew Nolan had only seen what Paul wanted him to see. He said you wanted to be in witness protection.
That wasn't going to happen.
He said you wanted me to watch you die.
Paul was quiet for a moment.
It had to seem real. I was going to come back for you. You know that.
Claire didn't respond.
Paul said, I'm going to take care of this. You know, I always do.
Claire took a stuttered breath. She couldn't stand the soft, reassuring tone of his voice. There was still an infinitesimal part of her that wanted her husband to somehow make it all better.
But Fred Nolan was right. The Paul she had known was dead. This stranger on the other end of the phone was an imposter. Or maybe he was the real Paul Scott, and her husband, her friend, her lover, had been the lie. It was only when he put on that black leather mask that the real Paul showed his face. She said, "I want to speak to my sister." "In a minute," he promised. "The battery on your phone is probably getting low. Did you bring the charger from the house?" Claire checked the screen. "It's at 30%. Paul said, "Go buy a charger. And you need to juice up the Tesla. There's a charging station at Peachtree Center. I downloaded the app for you, so just..."
"Let me talk to Lydia."
"Are you sure you want to do that?"
"Put my sister on the goddamn phone!"
There was a rustling sound, then the tinny echo of a speakerphone. "Wake up," Paul said. "Your sister wants to talk to you." Claire gritted her teeth. He sounded like he was speaking to a child.
"Lydia?"
she tried.
"Lydia!"
Lydia didn't answer.
"Please say something, Liddy, please."
"Claire." Her voice was so flat, so lifeless that Claire felt like a hand had reached inside her chest and ripped out her heart.
"Liddy," Claire said, "please just hold on. I'm doing everything I can."
Lydia mumbled, "It's too late."
"It's not too late. I'm going to give Paul the USB drive, and he's going to let you go."
Claire was lying. They all knew that she was lying. She started crying so hard that she had to brace herself against the wall.
"Hold on a little while longer. I'm not going to abandon you. I promise you, never again."
"I forgive you, Claire."
"Don't say that now."
Claire bent at the waist. Tears fell onto the floor.
"Tell me when you see me, okay? Tell me when this is over."
"I forgive you for everything."
"Pepper, please. I'm gonna make this right. I'm gonna make everything all right."
"It doesn't matter," Lydia told her. "I'm already dead."
Chapter 18. Paul was smiling when he put the phone down on the table beside the black hood. Lydia didn't look at the phone, which she could not reach, but at the soaked black hood next to it, which she knew would eventually be wrapped around her head again. The spray bottle was empty for the third time. Paul was drinking filtered water so he could fill it back up again. When he was ready, he would make her watch him fill up the bottle. Then he would put the hood back over her head. Then he would start spraying. Seconds before she passed out, he would shock her with a cattle prod, or whip her with a leather belt, or punch her, or kick her until she gasped for breath. And then he would start the process all over again. He said, "She sounds good, right, Claire?" Lydia looked away from the hood. There was a computer on a workbench like the one Paul had in his garage. Metal storage shelves. Old computers. She had cataloged everything in her head because she had been here almost 13 hours. Paul updated her with the time every half hour, and the only thing that was keeping her from going insane was reciting the inventory like a mantra while he tried to drown her in his piss. Apple Macintosh. Dot matrix printer.
5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
I bet you want to know what's on that USB drive, Lydia. I'd like to call it my get-out-of-jail-free card.
Apple Macintosh dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
Fred Nolan wants it. Mayhew, Johnny. Lots of other people want it, too. What a surprise. Paul Scott has something that everybody else wants.
He paused.
What do you want from me, Liddy?
Apple Macintosh, dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
Do you want some Percocet?
The question pulled her out of her stupor. She could almost taste the bitter pill in her mouth.
He shook the prescription bottle in front of her face. I found it in your purse. I guess you stole it from Claire.
He sat down in the chair across from her. He rested the bottle on his knee.
You were always stealing from her.
Lydia stared down at the bottle.
This would be it.
She had told Claire that she was already dead, but there was still an ounce of life left inside of her. If she gave in to her desire, if she took the Percocet, that would truly be the end.
Well, this is interesting.
Paul crossed his arms.
I've listened to you beg and plead and squeal like a stuck pig, and this is the line you're drawing? No Percocet?
Lydia tried to summon the euphoria the pills would bring. She'd read somewhere that if you thought about a food long enough, you wouldn't want it anymore. You would trick yourself into thinking you'd already eaten it. This had never worked with donuts or hamburgers or French fries or Apple Macintosh dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
I could force the pills down your throat. But what would be the fun in that?
He stretched her legs wider apart with his knees.
I could put them somewhere else.
Somewhere you could more easily absorb them into your system. He took a deep breath and sighed it out.
What would that be like, I wonder? Would it be worth fucking you if I could use my cock to shove all of these pills up your fat ass?
Lydia's mind started to go blank. This was how it happened. Paul would push her, and she would get too scared or too broken, and she would just shut down. His hand went to her thigh. His fingers drilled toward the bone. Don't you want the pain to go away? Lydia was too exhausted to cry out. She wanted him to get it over with. The punch, the jab, the slap, the electric cattle prod, the branding iron, the machete. She had seen what the masked man had done with the tools of his trade. She had seen what Paul's father had done to Julia. She had experienced firsthand the type of torture Paul was capable of. And she was certain that his role in the movies had been far from passive. He was enjoying this. No matter what derogatory things he'd said, Paul was aroused by Lydia's pain. She could feel the hard shaft of his prick when he leaned in close to gorge himself on her terror. Lydia just prayed that she would be dead by the time he finally got around to raping her.
New strategy. Paul snatched the pill bottle off his leg. He placed it on the rolling table where he was keeping his tools. I think you're going to like this.
Apple Macintosh dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner. He stood in front of the metal shelves beside the computer.
Her anxiety ramped back up, not because he was going to do something terrible and new, but because he was going to mess up the order of the items on the shelves. Apple Macintosh, dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner. They had to stay that way. In that exact order, no one could touch them. Paul dragged over a step stool. Lydia nearly cried with relief. They were safe. He was reaching up to the top shelf, past the equipment, past the floppy disks. He pulled down a stack of notebooks. He showed them to Lydia. Her relief dissipated. Her father's notebooks. Paul said, "Your parents are quite the prolific letter writers." He sat down across from Lydia again. The notebooks were in his lap. A stack of letters she hadn't noticed before were on top. He held up an envelope for Lydia to see. Helen's handwriting, precise and neat, and so sorrowfully familiar. "Poor lonely Lydia. Your mother wrote you tons of letters over the years. Did you know that?" He shook his head. "Of course you didn't know that. I told Helen I tried to get them to you, but you were homeless and living on the streets, or you were in rehab, but you checked yourself out before I could get to you." He tossed the letters on the floor. "I actually felt bad every time Helen asked me if I'd heard back from you. Because, of course, I had to tell her that you were still a fat, worthless junkie sucking cock for Oxy." His words had the opposite effect. Helen had written to her. There were dozens of letters in the pile. Her mother still cared. She hadn't given up.
"Helen would have been a great grandmother to Dee."
Dee. Lydia couldn't even summon her face. She had lost all images of her daughter the second time Paul had electrocuted her with a cattle prod.
"I wonder if she'll check out when Dee goes missing the same way she did after Julia was gone."
He looked up.
"You wouldn't remember this, but Claire was all alone after Julia."
Lydia remembered it. She had been there.
"Every night. Poor little Claire was all by herself in that big house on Boulevard, listening to your worthless piece of shit mother cry herself to sleep. No one cared if Claire cried herself to sleep, did they? You were too busy stuffing every hole in your body. That's why she fell so hard for me, Liddy. Claire fell for me because none of you were there to keep her from falling."
Apple Macintosh, dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
"These."
Paul held up one of her father's notebooks. "Your dad didn't care about Claire either.
All of his letters were to Julia. Claire read most of them, at least the ones he wrote before she went to college."
Think about how that made her feel.
Her mother was a borderline alcoholic who couldn't get out of bed. Her father spent hours writing to his dead daughter while his living daughter was standing right in front of him.
Lydia shook her head. It hadn't been like that. At least, not entirely. Helen had eventually pulled herself out of her depression. Sam had tried so hard with Claire. He had taken her shopping and to see movies and to visit museums.
No wonder she didn't want to go see him after he had the stroke.
Paul thumbed through the pages.
"I made her go. I told her that she would regret it if she didn't. And she listened to me. Because she always listens to me. But the funny thing is, I really liked your dad. He reminded me of my own father."
Lydia felt her jaw ratchet down so she wouldn't scream at him.
You never know with parents, do you? They can be selfish bastards. For instance, I thought Dad and I were close, but he took Julia without me.
Paul looked up from the notebooks. He obviously liked what he saw in Lydia's surprised expression.
I gotta say, I was upset about that. I got home from spring break, and there your big sister was in the barn. He hadn't left much of her for me to enjoy.
Lydia closed her eyes. Apple Macintosh. What came next? She couldn't look at the shelves. She had to think of it on her own. Apple Macintosh, he said.
Sam was smart. I mean, a lot smarter than any of us gave him credit for. He would have never found Julia's body. I'm the only person left alive who knows where she is. But your father was on to me. He knew about my dad. He knew that I was somehow involved. Did you know that?
Lydia had become anesthetized to surprises.
Sam asked me over to his apartment. He thought he was going to trick me. But I did some reconnaissance before we were supposed to meet.
He held up her father's notebooks like a trophy.
My advice? If you're trying to trick somebody, don't leave your playbook lying around.
Lydia gripped the arms of the chair.
Shut the fuck up!
Paul smiled.
There's my little fighter.
What did you do to my father?
Well, I think you know what I did.
Paul shuffled through the stack of notebooks. He checked the front pages. He was looking for something.
I arrived at his apartment at the requested hour. I poured us some drinks so we could talk like men. Your father liked doing that, didn't he? Making sure we knew who the men were and who were the boys.
Lydia could hear her father's voice in his words.
Sam drank his vodka. He called himself a social drinker, but we know he drank himself to sleep at night, don't we? Just like Helen did while poor Claire was sitting alone in her room wondering why no one in her family noticed that she was still alive.
Lydia swallowed. She tasted the sour burn of his piss.
I guess the vodka masked the sleeping pills I ground up in his drink.
Lydia wanted to close her eyes. She wanted to block him out, but she couldn't.
I watched his head dip.
Paul imitated her father falling into a stupor.
I tied him up with some sheets that I brought with me. They were torn into long strips. His hands were so limp when I tied him up that I was worried he'd die before the fun could start.
Lydia felt every sense lock onto him.
Paul leaned back in the chair with his legs spread wide.
Lydia forced herself not to look down because she knew exactly what he wanted her to see.
If you use strips of bed sheets to tie somebody up, then the marks don't show when the coroner gets them. If you're careful, I mean, because, of course, you have to fold the sheets properly, which I did because I had time with your father.
I want you to hear that, Liddy. I had lots and lots of time with your father. Lydia's mind had gone haywire. It was too much. She couldn't take in what he was saying.
When Sam woke up, we watched the tape together. You know the tape I'm talking about.
The tape with Julia? Paul rubbed the sides of his face. His beard was growing in.
I wanted us to watch all of the tapes together, but I was worried the neighbors would hear his screams.
Paul added.
Not that Sam didn't scream a lot at night anyway, but still.
Lydia listened to the steady in and out of her own breathing. She rearranged his words in her head until they fell into digestible sentences.
Paul had drugged her father. He had made her father watch his oldest daughter being brutally murdered.
At the end, I debated whether or not to tell Sam where Dad and I had dumped Julia's body. What's the harm, right? We both knew he was going to die.
Paul shrugged.
Maybe I should have told him. It's one of those questions you still ask yourself years later. I mean, Sam was so tortured, right? All he wanted to know was where she was. And I knew, but I just couldn't bring myself to tell him.
Lydia knew that she should rage against him. She should try to kill him, but she couldn't move. Her lungs were wet with urine. Her stomach was filled. Her body was seized by pain. There were welts on her arms where he'd electrocuted her. The cut on her forehead had been opened. Her split lip had been torn in two. Her ribs were so bruised that she felt like the bones had turned into knives.
He said, "I used Nembutal. You know what that is, right? They use it to put animals out of their misery, and he was miserable, especially after he watched the tape."
Paul had found the notebook he was looking for. "Here you go." He held up the page so Lydia could see. The bottom half was torn away.
"Look familiar?"
Her father's suicide note had been written on a torn-off sheet of notebook paper. Lydia could still see his shaky words in her head. "To all of my beautiful girls, I love you with every piece of my heart. Daddy."
Paul said, "I think I chose a good line, don't you?"
He put the notebook back in his lap.
"I chose it for Claire, really, because I thought that the line was particularly true about her. All his beautiful girls. You were never really beautiful, Lydia. And Julia, I told you I still visit her sometimes. She's no longer beautiful. It's been sad watching her decay over the years. The last time I checked in on her, she was just rotten bones with long strands of dirty blonde hair and those stupid bracelets she used to wear on her wrist. You remember those?"
"Bangles." Julia had worn bangles on her left wrist and a big black bow in her hair. And she'd stolen Lydia's saddle oxfords to complete the outfit because she'd said they looked better on her anyway. Suddenly, Lydia had too much saliva in her mouth. She tried to swallow. Her throat spasmed. She coughed.
"Don't you want to know where Julia is?" Paul asked. "It's really the one thing that broke you all apart. Not her disappearance, not her probable death, but the never knowing. Where is Julia? Where is my sister? Where is my daughter? The not knowing completely destroyed every single one of you. Even Grandma Jenny, though the old bitch likes to act like the past is past."
Lydia felt herself start to slip back into that in-between space. There was no use listening to him anymore. She already knew everything she needed to know. Dee and Rick loved her. Helen had not given up. Lydia had forgiven Claire. 2 days ago, she would have panicked if someone had told her that she had a finite amount of time to settle all of her affairs. But when she got down to it, her family was really the only thing that mattered.
"I visit Julia sometimes."
Paul was studying her face to gauge his words.
"If you had a dying wish, wouldn't it be to know where Julia is?"
"Apple Macintosh, dot matrix printer,
5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
I'm gonna read you some selections from your father's journals. And then I'm gonna waterboard you again in,
he looked at his watch, 22 minutes. All right? Apple Macintosh dot matrix printer, 5-inch floppy disks, duping machine, disk burner.
Paul rested the notebook in his lap on top of the others. He started reading aloud. I remember the first time your mother and I walked you through the snow. We wrapped you up like a precious gift. The scarf was wound so many times around your head that all we could see was your little pink nose.
His voice. Paul had known her father. He had spent hours with him, even up to his last hours. And he knew how to read Sam's words with the same soft cadence that her father had always used. We were taking you to see your grandma Jenny. Your mother, of course, was not pleased with this particular errand.
Yes, Lydia said.
Paul looked up from the page.
Yes, what?
Give me the Percocet.
Sure.
Paul dropped the notebooks on the floor. He unscrewed the top from the spray bottle.
But first, you have to earn it.
Chapter 19. Claire sat on the toilet with her elbows on her knees and her head in her hands. She had cried herself out. There was nothing left inside of her. Even her heart labored to beat in her chest. The slow thumps were almost painful. Every time she felt the pulse, her brain silently said the word, Lydia. 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 Her sister had given up. Claire could hear it in Lydia's voice, which had no tone except the tone of complete and utter surrender. What terrible thing had Paul done that made Lydia believe that she was already dead? Thinking about the answer to that question would only drive Claire deeper into despair. She rested her head against the cold wall, her eyes closed. She was punched drunk with exhaustion. The God's honest truth was that Claire desperately wanted to give up, too. She felt the desire with every fiber of her being. Her mouth was dry. Her vision was blurred. There was a high-pitched tone ringing in both of her ears. Had she slept inside the interrogation room? Could she count being knocked out by Paul as resting? All that Claire knew was that she had been awake for almost 24 hours. The last time she'd eaten was when Lydia made her egg bread yesterday morning. She had 2.5 hours before she was supposed to go to the bank in Hapeville. For what? Adam had the USB drive. He was the one Claire should be talking to. The Quinn and Scott offices were 10 blocks away. Adam would be there in a few hours for his presentation. Claire should be waiting in front of the office doors, not sitting on the toilet in the Hyatt. If her Hapeville lie had been designed to buy more time, then she'd bought herself another useless 4 or 5 hours. She still didn't know what she was going to do. Her mind was refusing to run around in the familiar circles. Mayhew, Nolan, the congressman, the gun. What the hell was she going to do with the gun? All the certainty from before had drained away. Claire could not rekindle the steely resolve she'd felt when she first held Lydia's revolver. Could she really shoot Paul? A better question might be, could she shoot him and actually hit him? She wasn't Annie Oakley. She would have to be close enough to hit him, but not so close that Paul could take the gun away. And she would have to throw it at his head because she didn't have any fucking bullets. The bathroom door opened. Instinctively, Claire pulled up her feet and rested her heels on the toilet bowl.
She heard the light tread of soft-soled shoes on the porcelain floor tiles. Harvey? Claire assumed such a large man would have a more lumbering tread. A stall door was pushed open, then another, until Claire's locked door rattled. Claire recognized the shoes. Brown, easy spirit loafers for walking through the stacks. Light tan pants that wouldn't show dust from old magazines and paperbacks.
Mom.
Claire unlocked the door.
What are you doing here? How did you find me?
I looped back around the building after I got rid of your tail.
You what?
I saw that man running after you. I went around the other side of the building and clapped my hands to get his attention and... Helen was holding onto the door. Her face was flushed. She was breathless. They let me cut through the main lobby. The guard at the side entrance told me you'd just left. You were running so fast I almost lost you, but then the bellman outside said you were here. Claire stared in open disbelief. Helen was wearing a colorful blue Chico's blouse with a chunky necklace. She should be hosting a book signing, not running through the streets of downtown Atlanta drawing off a tale. Helen asked, "Do you still want me to move your car?" Claire shook her head, but only because she didn't know what she wanted Helen to do. "I know Paul was accused of stealing money." Helen paused, as if she expected Claire to protest. "That Agent Nolan was at the house yesterday afternoon, and that police captain, Jacob Mayhew, dropped by almost as soon as he left."
"He did it," Claire said, and it felt good to tell her mother even the tiniest bit of truth.
"Paul stole $3 million from the company." Helen seemed appalled. $3 million was a hell of a lot of money to her mother. "You'll pay it back. You'll move in with me. You can get a job teaching art at the school." Claire laughed because she made it sound so simple. Helen pressed together her lips. She obviously wanted to know what was going on, but she only said, "Do you want me to leave you alone? Do you need my help? Tell me what to do."
"I don't know," Claire admitted, another slice of truth.
"I have to leave for Hapeville in 2 hours. Helen didn't ask why. She simply said, "All right, what else?" "I need to charge the Tesla. I need to get an iPhone charger. I have one in my purse." Helen unzipped her purse, which was brown leather with flowers embroidered around the strap. She told Claire, "You look awful. When was the last time you had something to eat?" Lydia had asked her that same thing 2 nights ago. Claire had let her sister take care of her, and now she was Paul's captive. His bargaining chip. His victim. "Sweetheart," Helen had the charger in her hand. "Let's go to the lobby and get something to eat." Claire let her mother lead her out of the bathroom, the same way she had led her out of the FBI interrogation room. Helen took her deep into the hotel lobby. There were several groupings of large couches and overstuffed chairs. Claire practically fell into the closest one. Helen said, "Stay here. I'll go to the cafe and get something." Claire leaned back her head. She had to get rid of Helen. The only reason Lydia was in trouble was because Claire had involved her in Paul's madness. She would not lead her mother down that same path. She had to think of something that would get them all out of this. Paul would want to meet somewhere isolated. Claire should have an alternative space to suggest. Somewhere open, with a lot of people around. A mall. Claire knew all of the high-end stores inside Phipps Plaza. She imagined herself walking through Saks with dresses folded over her arm. She would have to try them on because some of the brands were running smaller than usual. Or maybe Claire was running larger since she'd stopped playing tennis 4 hours a day. She wanted to look at the new Prada bags, but the display was too close to the perfume counter and her allergies were acting up. "Honey?" Claire looked up. The light had changed. So had the scenery. Helen was sitting on the couch beside her. She had a paperback in her hand. She was using her thumb to mark her place. She told Claire, "I let you sleep for an hour and a half." "What?" Claire sat up, panicked. She scanned the lobby. There were more people now. The front desk was fully staffed. Suitcases were being rolled across the carpet. She checked the faces. No Jacob Mayhew, no Harvey Falk. "You said you had 2 hours." Helen put the book in her purse. "I charged your iPhone. The Tesla is plugged in 1 street over on Peachtree Center Avenue. Your purse is right beside you. I put the key in the zippered pocket. There's some clean underwear in there, too." She indicated the coffee table. "The food is still warm. You should eat. It'll make you feel better." Claire looked down at the table. Her mother had bought her a large cup of coffee and a chicken biscuit. "Go ahead. You have time." Her mother was right. She needed to get something of caloric value in her system. The coffee she could handle. Claire wasn't sure about the food. She took the plastic lid off the cup. Helen had poured in enough milk to turn the liquid white, just the way Claire liked it. Helen opened a napkin and put it on Claire's lap. She said, "You know that revolver takes 38 special ammunition, right?" Claire sipped the coffee. Her mother had been inside the Tesla. She would have seen the weapon in the door pocket. "It's in your purse. It didn't seem safe to leave a gun in your car while it's parked on the street. I couldn't find a place downtown, or I would have bought ammunition for you." Claire put down the cup. She unwrapped the biscuit to give her hand something to do. She expected the smell to turn her stomach, but she realized that she was hungry. She took a large bite. Helen said, "Huckleberry called me. I know you know about the tape." Claire swallowed. Her throat still hurt from screaming in the backyard of the Fuller house. "You lied to me about Julia." "I protected you. There's a difference." "I had a right to know. You are my child. I am your mother." Helen sounded resolute. "I won't apologize for doing my job." Claire bit back a sharp comment about how refreshing it was to hear that Helen was back on the job. Helen asked, "Did Lydia show you the tape?" "No." She wasn't going to let her sister take the blame yet again. "I found it on the internet. I showed it to her." Lydia's phone. Helen had seen the unfamiliar number on her caller ID. "I took her phone. Mine was stolen during the robbery, and I needed one, so I took hers." Helen didn't press for a better explanation, likely because she had investigated countless thefts when the girls were growing up. She only asked, "Are you all right?" "I feel better, thank you." She looked over her mother's shoulder because she couldn't bring herself to look her in the eye. Claire couldn't tell Helen about Lydia. But she could tell her about Dee. Her mother was a grandmother. She had a beautiful, accomplished grandchild who was hopefully being hidden somewhere that Paul would never find her. Which meant that, right now, Claire couldn't let Helen find her either. Helen said, "Earlier, when Wynne and I were looking for you, I remembered something your father told me." She gripped her purse in her lap. "He said that children always have different parents, even in the same family." Family. Helen had more than she knew about. Claire felt the weight of her own guilt pressing down on her chest. Helen continued, "When Julia was little and it was just the three of us,
I think I was a pretty damn good mother. She laughed, because the memory obviously made her happy. And then Pepper came along, and she was such a handful. But I loved every frustrating, challenging minute of it because she was so opinionated and strong-willed, and she knocked against Julia all the time. Claire nodded. She could remember the screaming arguments between her older sisters. They were too much alike to get along for more than a few hours at a time. And then there was you. Helen smiled sweetly. You were so easy compared to your sisters. You were quiet and sweet-natured, and your father and I used to sit up at night and talk about how different you were. Are you sure they didn't mix up the babies at the hospital? He would say. Maybe we should go down to the county jail and see if our real child has been arrested for being a public nuisance. Claire smiled, because this sounded just like something her father would say. You watched everything. You noticed everything. Helen shook her head. I would see you sitting in your high chair, and your eyes would follow my every move. You were so curious about the world, and so keyed in to everybody else. The tempers and the passions and the overwhelming personalities. But I was afraid you'd get lost. That's why I took you on our little outings. Do you remember? Claire had forgotten, but she remembered now. Her mother had taken her to art museums in Atlanta and to puppet shows and even participated in an ill-fated pottery class. Just the two of them. No Pepper to ruin Claire's perfectly formed clay bowl. No Julia to spoil the puppet show by commenting on the patriarchal structure of Punch and Judy. Helen continued. I was a really good mother to you for 13 years. And then I was a really bad one for about 5. And I feel like I've spent every day since then trying to find my way back to that place where you see me as a good mother again. Claire had been either seeking or avoiding this conversation with Helen for the last 20 years. But she knew if they had it now, she would fall apart. So she asked, "What did you think of Paul?" Helen twisted the ring on her finger. Paul had been wrong. Claire twisted her own ring because she had seen her mother do it so many times. She said, "You won't hurt my feelings. I want to know the truth." Helen didn't hold back. "I told your father that Paul was like a hermit crab. They're scavengers. They don't have the ability to make their own shells, so they cast around until they find abandoned shells, and then they move in." Claire knew better than anyone that her mother was right. Paul had moved into her shell, the one that had been abandoned by her grief-stricken family. She told Helen, "I'm supposed to drive to Hapeville in half an hour, to a bank up from the dwarf house. It needs to seem like I'm there, but I have to be somewhere else." "What bank?" "Wells Fargo." Claire took another bite of biscuit. She could tell her mother was desperate for more information. "They're tracking me. I can't go to Hapeville, and I can't let them know where I'm really going." "Then give me your phone and I'll drive to Hapeville. I should probably take the Tesla. They might be tracking that, too." The phone. How could Claire have been so stupid? Paul had known she was in the FBI building. He had known her exact location on the street. He had told her to take a left toward the hotel. He was using the Find My iPhone app because he knew that Claire would not go anywhere without her only connection to Lydia. She told her mother, "I need to be able to answer the phone if it rings. It has to be my voice." "Can't you use call forwarding?" Helen jabbed her thumb toward the hotel gift shop. "They have a display for prepaid phones. We can buy you one of those, or I can give you my phone." Claire was dumbfounded. In less than a minute,
Helen had solved one of her biggest problems.
Here. Helen pulled her car keys out of her purse, along with a light blue parking ticket.
You hold on to this. I'll go check on a phone.
Claire took the keys. Ever the cataloger, her mother had written down the floor level and parking space number on the back of the ticket. She watched Helen talking to the clerk in the store. The man was showing her various models of phones. Claire started to ask herself who this confident and efficient person was. But she knew this person. This was the Helen Carroll she had known before Julia was taken. Or maybe it was the Helen Carroll who'd come back to Claire after mourning the loss of Julia. Because Helen had called Wynne Wallace the second she got off the phone with Claire. She had been searching for Claire all night. She had rescued her from Fred Nolan. She had distracted Harvey Falk so that Claire could get away, and now she was sitting in the lobby of a hotel doing everything possible to offer her aid. Claire longed to enlist her mother's help in solving her other problems, but she was incapable of coming up with a believable story that didn't reveal the truth. And she knew there was a limit to Helen's restrained curiosity. She couldn't believe how resourceful her mother had already been. She had even looked for ammunition for the gun. Paul would be shocked. Claire caught herself a moment too late. She wasn't going to tell Paul this story when he got home from work tonight. They would never share a moment like that, ever again. That was easy. Helen had already taken the phone out of the box. The battery has a half charge, but I got a car charger, and the nice man behind the counter had a coupon, so you got an extra 30 minutes for free. Inasmuch as paying for something to get something is free. Helen sat back down beside Claire. She was obviously nervous because she was babbling the same way Claire babbled when she was nervous. I used cash. I'm probably being paranoid, but if the FBI is tracking you, then they might be tracking me. Oh. She reached into her purse and pulled out a wad of cash. I got this at the ATM while you were asleep. $500. I'll pay you back. Claire took the money and stuffed it into her purse.
I can't believe you're doing this.
Well, I want to make it clear to you that I'm terrified about what you're involved in. She was smiling, but her eyes glistened with tears. The last time I was terrified about one of my children, I failed everyone in the family. I failed your father, and I failed you and Lydia. I'm not going to do that ever again. So, mea culpa all the way to federal prison if that's what it takes. Claire realized that Helen thought this was about the embezzled money. The FBI and the police had questioned her. Nolan had brought in Claire for a 12-hour interrogation. Claire was sending her to a bank in Hapeville. She clearly thought she'd put all the pieces together, but she had absolutely no idea what was really happening. Helen picked up Lydia's phone. The nice man at the store told me that you go into settings. Claire took the phone. It needs the password. She angled the screen so her mother couldn't see the last thing she'd looked at. Paul's photo of Lydia in the trunk. She got rid of the image and pretended to tap in the password before handing the phone back to Helen. Then watched, in amazement, as her mother navigated the software. Helen entered in the burner phone's number, then exited out of the menu.
Oh, look. She turned the screen toward Claire.
See that funny thing at the top, the image of a phone and an arrow? That means the calls are being forwarded. She seemed impressed.
What a wonderful little device.
Claire didn't trust the funny thing at the top.
Call the number and make sure it's working.
Helen took out her iPhone. She found Lydia's number under recent calls. They both waited. Several seconds passed. Then the burner phone started to ring. Helen disconnected the line.
My mother used to scold me for calling her on the phone. She said, it's so impersonal.
Why don't you write me a letter?
And I scold you for emailing instead of calling, and all of my friends scold their grandchildren for their illiterate texting. Such a strange gallimaufry of needs.
I love you, Mom. I love you too, sweet pea.
She cleaned up the mess Claire had left on the coffee table. Helen was trying to appear casual, but her hands were shaking. She still had tears in her eyes. She was obviously conflicted, but she was just as equally determined to do whatever she could to help.
I should get going. How long do I need to stay at the bank?
Claire had no idea how long it took to access a safety deposit box.
At least half an hour.
And then?
Get back on 75. I'll call you on your phone and let you know.
She remembered what Paul had said.
Be careful. That's not a great area, especially in the Tesla.
The bank will have a security guard in the parking lot. Helen touched Claire's cheek. There was still a slight tremor in her hand.
We'll have dinner after this is over. With drinks. Lots of drinks.
Okay. Claire checked the time so she didn't have to watch Helen walk away. Adam Quinn had said his presentation was first thing this morning. The offices opened at 9, which meant that Claire had half an hour to walk 10 blocks. The burner phone went into her back pocket. Her purse went over her shoulder. She finished her coffee as she walked back toward the bathroom. Claire's appearance had not improved since she'd seen her reflection in the mirror behind Fred Nolan. Her hair was plastered to her head. Her clothes were a mess. She probably smelled sweaty from running full bore through the city. The cut on her cheek was still tender. The dark circle under her eye was turning into a full-on black bruise. Claire touched her fingers to the skin. Paul had punched Lydia, too. He had made her forehead bleed. He had made her eyes swell shut. He had done other things, too. Things that had made Lydia give up. To believe that no matter what Claire did, she was already dead.
You are not dead, Lydia.
Claire spoke the words aloud for her own sake as much as her sister's.
I am not going to abandon you.
Claire ran water in the sink. She couldn't go to Adam Quinn looking like this. If Adam was clueless as to what Paul was really involved in, then he'd be much more likely to help Claire if she didn't look like a homeless person. She washed her face and then quickly took a whore's bath. The underwear Helen had bought came up past Claire's belly button, but she was in no position to complain. She slicked back her hair with water, then fingered it into a soft wave to dry. There was makeup in her purse. Foundation, concealer, eyeshadow, blush powder, mascara, eyeliner. She winced as she patted her finger around the bruise. The pain was worth it, because she felt like she was slowly coming back to herself. The hour and a half of sleep had probably helped more than the $90 concealer. She felt her thoughts whirring back awake. She remembered the question she had told Nolan he needed to ask. Why was Paul sticking around? He wanted the USB drive. Claire was not so narcissistic to think that her husband was waiting around for her. Paul was a survivor. He was risking his safety in order to get the USB drive, and he was telling Claire the things he thought she wanted to hear because keeping her on side was the best way to get it. Saying he loved her was the carrot. Lydia was the stick. Nolan thought that Paul was offering evidence of the masked man's identity, but Claire knew that Paul wasn't going to give the FBI evidence against himself. So what did that leave? What information could be on the drive that was so valuable that Paul was risking his freedom?
His customer list, Claire told her reflection. It was the only thing that made sense. On the phone yesterday, Paul had claimed he got into the family business because he needed tuition. Setting aside that he had graduated years ago